You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's only a kick. A jump. A block. It's only a serve. It's only a tackle. A run. It's only for the fans. After all, it's only pressure. You got this. Adidas.
Buzz! Buzz! Buzz!
Welcome in to the first At the Buzzer edition of 2022. This is, of course, your Ralphie Report podcast that covers all Colorado athletics goings on that's worth talking about. We are fresh off of a fantastic Rose Bowl game that occurred yesterday. We're warm enough for the basketball season to begin again in earnest. And it's a lot of stuff going on right now, good and bad, mostly bad. With CU Athletics, so
almost exclusively bad if you consider the greater Boulder area.
Yes, we'll get into that as well. Of course, that's less jokey and much more serious, but we'll talk about it just the same. I am one co-host, Jack, over there in sunny Europe, I guess, is our other co-host, Sam. Sam, hello.
Yeah. Yeah, thankfully, yep. I am in Italy where it is sunny and not in Denmark where it has not been sunny for like months. So I'm just enjoying the vitamin D.
Good. Get that sun in. Get that nice temperate weather. We want to talk about weather that was more apocalyptic and temperate right off the beginning. We know that plenty of the CU community, CU athletic community, and much of the Colorado community at large was affected by the most recent Marshall fire that sprung up on December 30th and evacuated two pretty large Denver metro towns in Superior and Louisville. And first of all, I want to make sure that anyone listening that was affected, we hope, number one, that you are safe and sound. Luckily, it appears that casualties or anything of that nature was kept to a very, very bare minimum. But we want to make sure you're safe, number one, and we hope, among hope, that you kept anything of value that you wished to, because that was a really weird, scary situation on December 30th. Fire came out of nowhere, and that shouldn't happen on the last days of the year. So we hope everyone is doing the best they can with that.
Even in fire season, like, the cities are untouchable, basically. Like we never have fires actually threatening the cities. Like last year, like I had to pack evacuation bags being in North Boulder during those fires. And that was terrifying. And like, I can't even imagine winds just pulling it to like, if they're so far from the mountains, that's unthinkable for me. Like, I can't even imagine. My heart goes out to everybody. And I have friends who lost their houses, and I just feel really like, I wish I could be there for everybody right now.
It's well, but luckily we know obviously that the community around those that have lost their lives is going to be as generous as possible. We've already seen a lot of that generosity proven through. And that, you know, obviously that goes out to the Buffs in the area. There's, you know, you're forever a Buff, and there are plenty of resources that have already stepped up and helped give those that need help what they need. So we want to point out a few of those official ones and some of the best spots we think you can funnel your generosity towards. I think the easiest, most obvious one is just the official disaster recovery efforts sprung up by the state of Colorado and the Boulder County at large. We will provide those links in the episode description, obviously, as well as our episode recap post. And Sam, I think you had a few more specific things you want to call attention to.
Yeah, we wanted to promote Sabatino Chen's GoFundMe. His family lost their home in Louisville. So we're posting it on our own Twitter. We're going to post the link to his GoFundMe. And if you are on GoFundMe, it's called like Chen Family Home. I don't know how to search on GoFundMe. But it's also on his Twitter and his Instagram, which are just under Sabatino Chen. You can find it. I think he's the only Sabatino Chen.
Yeah. He's obviously... So yeah,
we're sending him all the best wishes.
Yes. He's obviously been a huge supporter of this podcast and a huge... I don't know. He's great to talk to always. Really nice guy. And a CU legend. So please, everyone who can, give what they can to help those people rebuild. Because that was a freaky situation that I hope never happens again.
Yeah. Should we move on to the podcast?
Yes, I was entirely too genuine and heartfelt for that. So let's move forward into things I can be more cynical about, which is, of course, the CU football program. I am an unending wellspring of cynicism for this particular set and time. In case you've been living under a rock, we've had plenty of movement personnel and coaching wise since the season ended with a bone shattering loss to Utah. We've mentioned that a few times before. There have been plenty of coaching additions, but recently in this past week, we have seen some devastating departures from the depth chart. So yeah, we are in a rough way talent wise.
Yeah, so let's see. Yesterday, Sunday. What day is today?
Today's January 1st. Yesterday, Saturday. Yes. The start of the new year.
Brendan Rice, about a year after jokingly posting a transfer tweet. Do you remember that on April Fool's?
I do. Yes. He transferred from PS5 to Xbox.
He's transferring for real. He's entered the transfer portal and he will be leaving, and he is joining, of course, Christian Gonzalez, who is probably the best defender on the team who's not a senior, and Mark Perry, the very talented but erratic safety. So yeah, these are the three best sophomores on the team. Probably. I don't know where else to go other than, like, it felt like Brendan Rice and Christian Gonzalez were too talented to be on this team, and that turns out to be true.
Yeah, in a perfect world, Brendan Rice and Christian Gonzalez are the two guys you point to after a 4-8 season, and you say, okay, build around these dudes. They are solid. They are talented. They have NFL potential, both of them. Let's just focus on getting the talent level around them improved, and will hopefully be bowl eligible. You can't do that anymore. I think those are two of the, I don't know, definitely Gonzalez has NFL potential. I would say first round potential. That guy was a rock all year. He was since he signed. Another thing to point out is this means that every blue chip that Mel Tucker signed in the vaunted 2020 recruiting class has not even gotten close to exhausting the eligibility. So if we look at the four highest rated signings, which is Jake Ray, medically retired, Ashad Clayton transferred to Tulane, Brendan Rice transferring TBD and Christian Gonzalez transferring TBD. All in all, we got CU fans got to see four combined seasons out of those four players, right?
Yeah,
and that's not how you
build. And Mark Perry was one of the main ones.
He was 2019. He was the class before.
Yeah, but okay. I'm mixing up my timelines, but yeah.
Yeah, Mark Perry, also a clear talent. Like you said, he showed out erratically, but a late steal from USC in the recruiting class process. And he played a lot of football. This is an example of very, very bad attrition. Usually, I think it's a signal of something that's gone wrong. I don't want to never, of course, blame the kids. They're doing what's best for them. Both Gonzalez and Rice lost their position coaches in this offseason, so it's not a huge surprise. Because those are the people we spend the most time with. I don't know. Not a good thing. Not a good thing for CU football.
So besides like grad transfers and players who like lost their job, like Darian Rijkstra and Sam Noyer, like they were, the team was okay with them transferring. When was the last time a CU player transferred who CU wanted to keep? Off the top of your head, who's the first person you think of? How long ago was it? Because I have one 2008. That's the last one I can think of. Is Josh Smith leaving
school for UCLA? Israel Antoine, when Mike McIntyre was fired, going to Oklahoma State. That was a big loss. There you go. There's my one.
Okay.
Played really well as a freshman. Didn't like Mel Tucker. Yeah, Israel Antoine was a loss. But really, like you mentioned, there's not a lot of plus Power 5 players that transfer out of CU recently just because there hasn't been a lot of
stick around Power 5 for shit players. Yeah. No. Even
LaVisca stuck around, in
like 2010, like Nate Solder, Jimmy Smith, Jaleel Brown, like all these guys were on shit teams.
Uh-huh.
And they just, like, even when they're bad teams, players usually like being on CU. And I think like we can probably talk about this on a larger scale. And I don't know if I want to segue too quickly, but like this is the new transfer rules of immediate transfer eligibility.
Mm-hmm.
Is that like you have these programs like CU, which has become, much to our detriment, a bottom feeding conference league, a conference team. And we might be seeing these teams like become feeder programs to the bigger ones.
Okay. Yeah. I know. I think this is a worthwhile conversation. A lot of talks have been saying that this is like NIL based. Brendan Rice is, you know, there people are saying that he's leaving because there's not a lot of NIL opportunity around the CU program. There are people talking like that. There's the transfer rules. Obviously, it's a brand new day in college football. You know, my thought is I actually don't think I think the transfer rules on average will help bottom tier Power 5 teams and upper tier G5 teams more than they'll hurt. It goes on what you value. Like you mentioned, I think the proven talent sometimes will leave to go get a more opportunity, and that we're seeing that happen. I think that was happening at the Group of Five level anyways at a pretty wide scale. I think what we're also seeing is players aren't going to wait 3 years at Ohio State to start for 1 year, right? And I think a lot of what you're seeing dominant programs, like Alabama is really good at this, is there a lot of what brings their dominance is the depth of talent, not necessarily the high-end talent. I think a lot of what creates really good college football teams is that you can have guys that are really good on your second and third string, and you rotate in, there's not a drop, you know, all that stuff. Talent pipeline's looking good. And if the whole thing about the transfer rule is there's less patience, right? If that's what we're seeing, there's less patience from players. They want to go where they are best showcased. That also applies to bench players on high-level Power 5 teams. I think we're seeing a lot of those guys also move so they can better show out. And that would put CU in a position to benefit. Easy examples of Robert Barnes last year. Didn't work out because of injuries, but that's a guy who is playing spot minutes at Oklahoma, going to play a lot at CU, you know. Jack Lamb, same thing. Spot minutes at Notre Dame, going to play a lot at CU. Mm-hmm. And you're going to see a lot of that movement as well. So I don't think it's the end of the world for teams like CU. I think player movement in general is going to actually even out talent a bit, but the high-end talent will still stay at the high-end talented schools.
It does feel like, though, that we would be losing our proven talent and taking risks on unproven talent at bigger schools.
Well, that's what I was going to say is which, what you're going to see is the consistency at bigger schools increase, I think, because they don't have to wait to make sure they develop right. They can just say, we're going to pick the best every year. Basically, you know, there's going to be a semi-draft. However, it still allows you, you know, you play USC once a year, but you play Arizona and Arizona State and similarly talented teams quite often. So I on aggregate, I don't think it's going to be the worst thing for CU, but maybe that's too optimistic. I don't know.
Okay. Maybe.
And,
I don't know.
In this specific instance, it's terrible. Right. What we're looking at right now is awful.
Yeah. It's also like I honestly feel like if I was as good as Brendan Rice or Christian Gonzalez, I would be leaving. Like, there's no reason this team isn't going to be good next year. Like, we already know that. There's no reason they should be risking injury to play for a bad team when they can go make more money on NIL and secure better draft stock. Why wouldn't you stay if you can just go?
Yeah, especially in their instance. Look, CU's had six head coaches since 2005. You know, there's a Rose Bowl graphic saying that's most in the country in that time. That is, you know, these guys were recruited by, I think, McIntyre first, maybe not. And then, you know, Tucker came in. They had Tucker for 1 year. Then they had Carl Durrell. There's different position coaches in all of that, especially for Gonzalez. You know, that's a lot of – you can't – it's hard to get attached to guys like that. You know, it's hard to attach to a program when everyone that is your leader, that is paid to lead you, is shifting like that. So, I don't know. I cannot blame them at all. I think their thought process totally makes sense. And like you mentioned, there's going to be a lot of struggling for CU next year. I think anyone will say that. So why do that? Brendan Rice had like, what, 20 catches last year? Should have had like 60? Yeah, leave. go somewhere where you can get 60. I don't know.
Yeah, there's no room for him to shine when this offense is that bad.
Yeah, and, you know,
I remember
– go ahead.
There was a game where I think he had one catch for 7 yards, and I was like, wow, he was the best player on the field today. Because like one of his catches got wiped off on a hold. One of them was like a two-point conversion.
Yeah.
Just stuff like that. It's like,
yeah,
damn, please get him the ball.
Yeah, he's a great talent. We wish him the best. We did not get him the ball, and CU is now paying for it.
Those two will have their pick of the litter with like where they're going.
Yeah, you know, people are already speculating Gonzalez to Oregon because that's where the defensive backs coach just moved to for CU. I don't know if that's going to be the case, that'll be fun to play against. CU in general has had a lot of transfers. I think USC is the only team that has more than them in the Pac-12. A lot of this is attrition you won't really notice, especially next year. I don't think it would be stuff that's too alarming, but stuff like this is absolutely. And if more starters come out and transfer, we are looking at a pretty bad. We're looking at stuff that requires some large scale changes, is what I would say. I don't know. Speaking of changes, and this is going to be a more positive note, at least for me, there's also been a lot of staff movement in the last few weeks. I will go through the full rundown, Sam, if I have your permission.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm not even paying attention.
Awesome. So let's start with the biggest, I think this was the first hire. Mike Sanford, we might have mentioned this before in a prior podcast. Mike Sanford was hired as the offensive coordinator, replacing Darren Shiverini. We will get into the analysis of all these guys later. Along with that hire, there is an offensive line coach, new offensive line coach hired. Kyle Devan was the new offensive line coach hire. On the defensive side, the surprising departure of Demetrius Martin at defensive backs coach led to a new defensive back coach being hired, Rod Chance. And finally, out of the blue came another defensive coach hire that had no real replacement, no real easy spot to look at right now, and that is Vic Saoto at defensive line, offensive outside linebacker, something like that, as a coach. So those are the four hires. We can probably expect another hire on the offensive side of the ball, depending on what role Mike Sanford takes coaching. Sam, before I go even deeper into why I love a lot of these hires, I wanted to hear your overall thoughts on what transpired.
My thoughts on the coaching searches.
Yeah, and I think the offensive coordinator is the easy one to start with, given that there was a lot of weird, you know, a lot of no info and then a lot of bunk info near the end.
Yeah, I mean, I wasn't really following the coaching search very closely. I wasn't on the message boards every day like you were.
Not a good.
But I think the general takeaway, from this is that there weren't that many coordinator positions open across the country because most programs were hiring head coaches from other teams, and there weren't any promoting of offensive coordinators, so there weren't that many spots open, and that CU could barely get in the door with any of them.
Okay.
So it really just showed like the process seemed to be so slow and so uninspiring that you really have to think that this is not a valuable job to have. Like, becoming an offensive coordinator at CU is not prestigious at all. And I don't think that they come with very much job security.
Well,
like,
that's,
like, we just hired. Go ahead.
Well, that's the main thing to me is some of what we're looking at here is I don't know how much of the job not being attractive it was, as opposed to, Carl Durrell's going to hire you in the end of 2020. How long is Carl Durrell going to be there? You know, we don't quite know what that looks like. So that's going to be a cause for pause with some coaches.
Yeah, like, what does Mike Sanford do? I remember seeing everybody on Twitter just blasting them because every single team he's been on, the offense has been worse than the year prior and then better when he leaves.
Yeah, so I would love to get into each of these coaches, and I'll start with Mike Sanford. I was trying to tee you up to talk about how we both got excited. I think a lot of the fan base got excited that Brennan Marion might have been the hire. There's a lot of Twitter smoke around Brennan Marion.
Yeah.
Who is fun, innovative, young. He is the wide receiver coach for the Texas Longhorns. He just switched. He moved from Pitt.
Oh, that'll be good for him.
I hope so as well.
Well, he's also like – he's definitely a – he's just jumping from job to job. I think that's pretty obvious just looking at his resume.
Yeah.
I don't think he stayed in the place more than 2 years, but he did have a really exciting, like he's very exciting to see. And that's obvious for me to say, cause I only learned about him 3 weeks ago when we started hearing his name, but he's much more exciting than this other guy who they're both unproven, but this guy we got seems to be more proven to not work.
I was about to say, Sanford's proven. He's definitely had experience. Experience being bad is not a good thing, though. So, yeah.
I mean, it's better than Shiv, but.
Right. So, I wanted to talk about overall with the hires, too, but I'll start with just Sanford. Brennan Marion had some smoke. That turned out to be not a real thing. There was, I'm trying to think, it was widely reported. There was three finalists. We don't quite know who the three finalists were. Obviously Sanford won out. And just speaking about Mike Sanford, which once again, this might be a semi repeat, but his offenses are definitely run heavy, which fits with what Carl Durrell has always wanted to do on offense. He definitely, is pro style. I'll say that for sure. He likes under center, a lot of that stuff before. And he's had plenty of experience as a offensive coordinator at the Power Five level. That's pretty much the end of the positives. The negative, the big negative, like Sam mentioned, is the offenses generally get worse whenever he's in charge of that, which in my opinion is a pretty big negative.
Mm-hmm. I also am concerned that he's literally from the Dan Hawkins coaching tree.
Yes, quarterback at Boise State while Dan Hawkins was the head coach there. And that's how he got a start. He then moved to he was a GA under his father, who was a head coach, I believe, at UNLV or New Mexico, one of those
two. Yes, I'm reading your article right now.
Yeah, and then he went to Stanford. He did some good things at Stanford. I think he was a mixture of running backs coach, technically recruited Christian McCaffrey, but you know, I think the program did more recruiting than anything. Was a wide receivers coach with Ty Montgomery, had his big year, and I believe was also a quarterbacks coach at some point too, when David Shaw was still very involved in the offense. Moves from Stanford. Mm-hmm.
Can you tell me about Stanford quarterbacks? Are they good?
They were once upon a time, Sam. Once upon a time, they were good. They have not been for quite some time. He was not, I don't think, was he there with Andrew Luck? He might have been.
No, I don't. He wasn't responsible here for Andrew Luck if he was there.
Test my memory here. I think directly after that, did he go to Notre Dame directly from Stanford?
He said went to Boise State for 1 year and that's then right. Stanford.
That's right. And then
according to your article that you so thoroughly remembered.
Yeah. So he went to Boise State for 1 year as offensive coordinator, had pretty good success there. And then went to Notre Dame when Brian Kelly was still also heavily involved in the offense and I believe calling plays. And they averaged around 30 a game when he was there. That's probably his best feather in his cap. But once again, Kelly shared a lot of the responsibility. Still was in charge of recruiting quarterbacks, was a quarterbacks coach. So he recruited Ian Book, who happened to be a pretty good college quarterback for the Irish. Then he got a head coaching job very young. I think he was like 33, 34 at Western Kentucky. The Hilltoppers, who were an explosive offense before he got there, a moribund offense while he was there, and an explosive offense after he left. So, you know, take what you will from that. Extremely young, like I mentioned. He was coached there for, I believe, 2 years, 3 years before they pulled the plug. Landed a golden parachute after that. I think he went straight to Minnesota after that as their offensive coordinator for the past 2 years. Was just fired by PJ Fleck at the end of this year, and now he ends up at CU. So a lot of firings in his resume. Maybe
if you can't cut it at Western Kentucky, you can definitely cut it in the Pac-12.
The Hilltopper is a high bar. That's what they say. So,
you know, I thought that there was something positive about this, but it just sounds worse and worse and worse.
Well, here's the positives I'll come out of. Experienced and young are two good things to be as a head coach, as a coach in general. And he's both those things, still in his 30s, hanging on near the tail end of 30 here. I think he's like 38, 39. And he's definitely been around a lot of big time programs, very much not successfully at times. If you look at a few more advanced metrics, they seem to actually really like his Minnesota offense last year. He's definitely a control the clock, run the ball out, you know, get to third and short every drive guy, which I could see why advanced metrics would like that kind of efficiency. However, he was also gifted probably the best offensive line in the Big Ten up there, super experienced offensive line. He will not be gifted that offensive line at Colorado. So we'll see how that efficiency still stacks. But by efficiency metrics, Sam, Minnesota's offense was like top 30, top 40 in the country this year.
Yeah, also helps that they had just a stable of really good running backs. I know they got hurt, but they were all fantastic. Yes. And we all saw that too.
Yeah. And exactly. They blanked CU. He scored 30 against CU, which wasn't that hard given the defense was on the field for like a million minutes. Distressing with the Minnesota offense is that Tanner Morgan looked like an All-American as a freshman, and his 2 years under Samford, he got worse and worse. Who knows how much of that is the player, how much of that is the coach, but certainly not a good sign for
also that coach. His receivers went to the NFL and then sat out a year and went to the NFL.
Right. Yes. Yeah, exactly. No Rashad Bateman, and who's the other guy missing that was really good?
Tyler Johnson.
Thank you. So yeah, and I don't know. This is the most Carl Durrell hire I could think of. Super safe hire in every way. Will work on
control. Why is he like this?
I don't know. It's just the way I keep describing Carl Durrell is he's just like, you know how some old school coaches would talk about football guys. I feel like he super values like what a football guy is like. Mike Sanford was born into the game. His dad was a coach. He respects the, you know, stuff like that.
Like, it doesn't even feel like a football guy type of hire. Like, I would love Jim Tomsula, if you remember him.
Wow.
Like, those, like... Like, not that I want to hire Jim
Tomsula. I was about to say, I think he's available, man.
That's a football guy to me, is like the like Dan Campbell, like that type of thing.
Well, yeah, I think Dan Campbell's a little
like,
too
like
flashy.
A red ass, but okay, but these guys are just boring. It's like,
yes,
if David Shaw wasn't successful,
which he isn't right now. Yes, which is, it's just boring, sad football. Yeah, yes.
Yeah, that's what we're getting. We're just getting we're Stanford football without the years of success before that.
And well, and that's hopefully we do bring the success. We have the strength and conditioning from the coach from those years of success. Stanford was also part of that staff. Carl Durrell seems to really value that model. Who knows if it's sustainable without Stanford's brand, but that's, I think, what he's going for. You can tell, dear listener, that Sam and I are not huge fans, especially when there was such an ample opportunity to go be something different and be something exciting. This is the most not different I can think of. You know, I do love running the ball, and I appreciate that CU's will continue to value running the ball, but there are ways to do that without being paint drying. And I think it's some of what we're going to see next year.
I think that the most positive thing, besides Shiverini being gone and not having his recruiting,
positive thing is hard to do worse. If CU somehow does worse, it'll be more of an accomplishment than improving.
As an offensive coordinator that has a similar idea of what he wants to do as the head coach, I think that that should be better, because Shiverini doesn't know how to run an offense that Durrell wants.
Well, and just, it's hard to be worse than 126 the passing offense. It literally is not a lot of spots. CU
worse. They were that good.
Yes, I believe we beat out Navy and Air Force.
Oh my God.
But don't worry, Minnesota was way better at 115th in passing offense last year. So, but they did run a lot and they ran well. I will say that. So, in general, that's the offensive coordinator hire. I believe, like I mentioned, there's going to be one more hire on the offensive side of the ball. Danny Langsdorf may still be retained. We don't know exactly what Stanford's going to coach. He can be a quarterback's coach. It's what I would prefer he takes. There's a wide receiver coaching spot available, and he's done that in the past. I would prefer that our offensive coordinator not be a wide receiver coach again. So we'll see how that goes. He already made his first hire as a offensive coordinator, and that is Kyle Devan, offensive line. This, in my opinion, is where the hires start looking up. Kyle Devan, I think, is a pretty good hire and about the best we could expect CU to do in this situation. Want me to keep going?
Yeah, I don't know what you want me to say. Yeah,
I'll go in. So, Kyle Devan most recently was an analyst from the Michigan Wolverines, who just won the Joe Moore Award for best offensive line. He before that was the offensive line coach under Kevin Sumlin at Arizona for 2 years. That whole thing was a disaster top to bottom, so not hard to blame him for anything there. Before that, he was an NFL player for a long time, all Pac-10 player at Oregon State before that. And he is a guy that I think is a pretty good mix. He's young, which is good. He recruited pretty well at Arizona, knows the footprint well in general. You know, West Coast guy, just spent some time learning under, like I said, probably the best incubator for offensive line coaching under Sharon Moore in Michigan, who's amazing, and Jim Harbaugh, who always has pretty good lines. So he comes in here with a nice group of experience, and I expect him to recruit obviously better than what we've seen for the past 2 years, and I think he's going to be a competent coach for those guys. Also, he's a player's coach, super fun guy to be around, which I think is important, especially on the offensive line, given that they don't get a lot of glory. So that's my basic gist of Devan. I think he's a good young coach who will be competent. He'll recruit you okay. He'll get your guys coached up okay. Not a liability.
Yeah, and he didn't sell blocking equipment to high school.
That's right. And he wasn't the AD of a high school before Carl Durrell hired him.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. I mixed up my two jobs that he did. Oh, my gosh. That was such a bad hire.
Yeah, that will go down as one of the worst Power 5 hires in retrospect, I think. But Kyle Devan is not that. Kyle Devan is not that. Take heed. He is a competent Power 5 coach.
yeah, that's the lowest bar he could clear. Like Shiv has a low, like that's a low bar for Sanford to clear, but it's a lower bar for Devan to clear.
Oh yes, yeah, he will, I think he'll be a bigger improvement though than Sanford was from Shiv. I think we'll be pleasantly surprised how the offensive line looks. So that was the other offensive hire. Darian Hagan still in there at running backs coach, and
thank God.
Brian Cook still in there at tight ends coach for now. Moving over the defensive side of the ball, because to me this is much more interesting that they made any moves because it looked like the staff is going to stay in place. Let's start with the guy I'm going to crown the best hire of this offseason and the best hire Carl Durrell has made, period. Vic Suoto is coming in after being fired from USC as part of the Helton staff. I think he has the potential to be one of the best position coaches in the Pac-12, period. I love this guy. Love him.
Yeah, why so? Why is that?
Okay. I'm just leaving space just in case because I'm happy to talk for 20 minutes straight. Suoto, I loved him a lot while he was at Virginia, back when they had a really good defensive line and Bryce Perkins. I watched them a lot because I love watching Bryce Perkins, if you remember that team.
No, I remember your love for Bryce Perkins.
Yeah, so I watched them a lot, and the defensive line was always pretty good. I looked up the coordinator or the defensive line coach, and it was Suoto, and he is just exactly what I want to see from a position coach. He's 35, still super young. Played at BYU, and he's from San Diego area. So exactly the profile you want to see. Knows how to recruit Utah some, still has roots there, still has roots in California. From Virginia, he was hired the past 2 years to coach USC's defensive line. He recruited the number one recruit in the country while at USC successfully. And, you know, had a bunch of other really good recruits. Jay Toa is really good. Marlon Tuipioto, I said that completely wrong, but he was also really good. He is fantastic at coaching, fantastic at recruiting, young, has the right recruiting footprint in mind, plenty of room to grow. Love the guy. I think he's going to be fantastic, and I hope to see you. He will be fantastic at CU for a long time.
And what does our D-line look like next year?
Yeah. So we're losing Mustafa Johnson. Terrence Lang is supposed to be coming back. Jalen Sami is supposed to be coming back. So some pretty good building blocks there. Both Devan and Suoto will have some recruiting to do right away, given that there was almost no offensive or defensive line signees in this incoming high school class. So I'd expect a lot of transfers on both those sides.
How long has Terrence Lang been at CU?
Since 2017, I believe.
Yeah, I need to find this out.
Yeah, that dude's old.
Okay, 2017, 18, 19, 20, 21. Oh, my God. He's going to be.
Yeah, he's going to be a beast. He has been. Love the guy.
Yes. Sixth year senior. Oh, my God. Sixth year
senior. Let's get it. Yeah. And so the weird thing about Suoto is, I'm saying it so wrong, it's so Oto, is he is presumably taking the same spot that Chris Wilson coaches. Our defensive coordinator, Chris Wilson, obviously also coaches the defensive line. Chris Wilson is one of the best defensive line coaches in the game, period. But he will be moving on into a different role. So he's coached middle linebackers before. That would be a natural fit, given that our current inside linebackers coach, Mark Smith, has coached defensive backs before at the Power 5 level. So that was the associated bing, bang, boom. However, Sam.
Yes.
CU just hired a new defensive backs coach, so I don't think you need to slot anyone else in that position. The other new hire replacing Demetrius Martin is Rod Chance. Rod Chance, this is an odd thing, is basically in a trade. He was Oregon's defensive backs coach under Mario Cristobal for the past two seasons. Dan Lanning comes into Oregon, hires CU's defensive backs coach. Now Oregon's defensive backs coach is coming to CU. So Rod Chance, similar profile, I think another great hire. Late mid-30s, so young guy still. High Power 5 experience, coached DBs at Minnesota for 1 year. If you remember Antoine Winfield Jr., Rod Chance was
his. Yes, of course I do.
There you go. Rod Chance was his position coach the year that he went nuts and got drafted in the second round. He was at Oregon for the last 2 years, as I mentioned, recruited some really high ranked guys. He was a Georgia high school coach, so he has some Georgia connections. Obviously has some West Coast connections through Oregon. Just another great hire, solid coach in the recruiting footprint. Defensive staff, in my opinion, looks really good. Really good.
Oh, also some Utah connection.
Yeah. That'd be nice. Southern Utah's defensive coordinator. Yes, Southern Utah's defensive coordinator. Him and Sooto both have some pretty nice Utah connections. I personally really like how the defensive staff is shaping up. Right now there's 11 assistant coaches. CU is allowed 10. So we'll probably see someone moving on, presumably from the defensive side. It'll be interesting to see who that is. Michael Lowski's contract has expired and he was the offensive outside linebackers coach. That would be an obvious choice, but we will see.
Yeah. I don't want Michael Lowski to leave. He's a really good recruiter too.
And he's cheap. Yeah. I like both of those things. He's relatively inexpensive, good recruiter, connects with the guys pretty well. So I don't want him to leave either, but it's getting crowded. I don't know. Overall, I think the staff got way better this offseason, coincidentally. I want to see if there's a higher left on the offensive side of the ball or if they're retaining Langsdorf in some capacity. My preference is that Sanford becomes a quarterback's coach, Langsdorf moves on, and there's a new guy that we hire at wide receiver coach or passing game coordinator, whatever you want to call it. That'd be my preference, but we'll see what that looks like. In general, I think the staff got better. Just think the talent didn't.
Yeah. We're not going to be good next year. That's okay.
Don't worry. The schedule only has 11 Power 5 teams in Air Force, so it's not like it's hard.
What if we go 0-12? That would fucking suck.
It would suck, but, you know, we're going to talk about this more as we get deeper in the offseason and my discontentment grows. An 0-12 season would force some massive changes that I think would need to happen regardless. So, you know, pain would equal new things. Anyways, let's move on to something that won't be massive changes.
What? CU basketball?
Basketball, baby! Back on the schedule! Yes, man.
Since December 18th, since CU has played, but they are finally playing the Oregon Ducks on Monday, tomorrow.
Absolutely. And I believe everyone will have a clean bill of health because I think that COVID issues will have been fully resolved by then. I don't know.
Yeah, and they've been resting their weary little legs. And Oregon just played on Saturday. They beat Utah.
Yep.
I don't know if Oregon's good. I don't think you know if Oregon's good. I don't think Oregon.
Yeah, I was about to say, Oregon doesn't know if Oregon's good.
I don't think we'll win, but it's okay. We could.
Is this on the road, right? This is at Matthew Knott Arena?
Yeah.
Yeah, that'll be tough. Like you said, CU's going to be rusty. I'm sure you've seen, Sam, that for for canceling the Kansas game, CU got 5 votes in the AP poll, which I find hilarious.
What?
Yeah, after the Kansas game was canceled, the next AP poll came out and CU had 5 votes, which I'm sure would not have happened if they lost to Kansas, as was predicted. So, yes, they are now in the receiving votes category as a 9-3 team.
Vote for them even if you've seen them play? Why would you vote for them?
But they haven't seen CU play is the thing. Got to be one of the worst teams against the spread in the country. Got to be.
Well, they're not. They're not good also.
CU?
Yeah.
I'll agree. Yeah, sure. But, you know, it's a young team. Lumps are expected.
Yeah. It's okay. It's okay that they're not good. They'll be better at the end of the year. Absolutely. It's just like right now they're not a good team. They shouldn't be scraping by, like barely being able to score 65 points against a bad team.
Right. And no shooting. You know, it's hard. It's hard. Yeah. It's hard to see where the offense comes from consistently.
Yeah.
If you can come out of this road trip 1-1, I'm pretty happy. Are you happy with that?
It's not a road trip yet. So they're playing Oregon, and then on Thursday and Sunday, they host Washington State and Washington.
Oh, this is the one-off.
Away game. Yeah, the Oregon State away game hasn't been rescheduled yet.
Okay, so if you go 2-1 in those games, I'm extremely happy. Are you expecting 2-1?
I don't know how good Washington State is. I like
disappointing. I haven't been able to watch. Disappointing to me.
Yeah. Yeah. The issue is like I haven't been able to watch very much CU basketball at all because like there's no highlights, there's no condensed games I can easily watch, and all the games start at 2 a.m. my time. So I've just been behind. So I haven't been watching Washington State basketball if I can't watch CU basketball.
They've been struggling, and they took some losses to some WAC teams, which isn't a bad conference this year, but still, they've taken a few boneheaded losses. I believe they started conference play. Not great. For someone who should be, you know, top four team this year.
Wait, what the fuck?
What?
Dude, they beat Arizona State 51-29. What the fuck?
Yes. That was a fire Bobby Early game. That was a very funny game. And that was at Arizona State too.
How did that happen?
Arizona State is a broken team with a broken head coach is how that happened. Never forget. Bobby Hurley, I believe, makes double tap oil mix. Never forget.
This is so funny. I need to be following this a little bit.
Yeah, well, it's been hard. No CU basketball. So funny.
Oh, the Arizona State beat Oregon. That's – oh, what the
– on a buzzer beater.
What is going on?
Yeah, Pac-12 is weird this year, but all of college basketball is weird this year. It looks like it's going to be a Big 12 versus everyone type of game.
I've noticed that so far that I can't keep track of who's good and who's not, and the COVID situation has not made anything easier to follow.
No,
there's This is going to become very apparent as the season goes on that I'm sacrificing college basketball because I didn't realize how much sports I consume on a regular basis when I was at home. Like I would watch soccer in the morning, baseball in the afternoon, basketball at night, whatever. And I always just would have sports on. I'd be following. And now that everything starts at like 11 p.m. at the earliest, I am not following anything. And I can't catch up. I can't just catch up on everything in the morning. Like I'm not even following any sport right now closely. It's bad. So don't take it for granted, Jack.
I mean, you got to get like a YouTube TV or something that DVRs those things for you automatically.
Yeah, but I mean, like, I can't just, if it doesn't feel right to just watch DVR versions of the game. Like, if it's not live, if I'm not following it, it feels like an addiction if I'm like, oh, I got to, I know that you
do. What a strange line to draw. It's just time, like you said, it's just time. You can't stay up late all the time, so the time you would spend otherwise, you're now spending in the morning watching the game that you weren't up for.
Yeah, I mean, at the same time, so like the morning is my productive time, so I am in school and I'm trying to be productive, and I've been spending way too much of my mornings trying to watch basketball from the night before. It's just not it's not good. I need to go home.
It sounds like you just need a system, or pay someone to do your schoolwork for you is what it sounds like.
I used to do that at CU. I shouldn't say it, but I was one of the people who got paid.
Nice, beautiful.
Whatever.
Yeah, I don't know. It's. Pac-12 is weird this year. College basketball in general is weird this year. Like you said, COVID issues makes it harder even still to figure out who's good and who's not. But this, I feel like this is a test of equals against Oregon on when they go on the road. So it'll be interesting to see how they respond. Mm-hmm. This team is still dangerously thin on experience with the road games, especially those with people in the crowd. So I don't know.
I don't know. What else? Do we have anything else?
I don't think so. Colorado women's basketball still undefeated. One of the three undefeated teams in the country, ranked good this year. They were eighth seed in the last bracketology I saw, which will be a death knell because that would be going against UConn. But you know, hey, still glad they're making the tourney for the first time in a while. Great, fun team to watch. Fun team to watch. They move the ball well.
Yeah, I want to say, who's the Quincy Miller?
She's
sixth woman.
Yes.
Quay Miller. She is so cool. Yep. And I am so glad she's on the team because she She's like not a consistent offensive player at all, but whenever she goes off, she goes off. And that's so nice to have as a six woman.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just very happy.
I mean, she moves really well for like what, 6'5" center. She's like, you know, a pretty big center for Pac-12 play, and she moves really well. So
yeah, and she's skilled.
Yeah,
she can shoot. She can pass. She can do everything, and she's big.
Yep,
and she's bodies people.
Jalen Sherrod continues to be a great lead guard. Glad to see her back from injury. I don't know. Team's worth watching, especially as we get into conference play and it's just best against best. This is a really good team. We're happy for J.R. Payne, who's had a long, hard road. Always positive. Always a great recruiter. Yeah, I don't know. Watch the women's basketball team whenever you find time.
Yeah.
I'm done. Cool.
See you, Jack.
Goodbye.
Buzz!